What else have I got here? Austin also said, Simon, your guest comment, interesting, Indonesia Jewish community growing and yet South African Jewish community shrinking as more Jews make Aliyah. That's a really interesting comment, Austin. I'm going to ask Dan his thoughts on that. How about that? The Indonesian Jewish population growing, South African contracting.
It's actually interesting. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday here in Joburg, and he told me that the emigration rate out of the Jewish community in South Africa is at a five-year low. And part of it is because the world has changed. People see that Australia is not such a safe place to be Jewish. They see that Israel has a war every 6 months. They see the division in the U.S., the terrible economy in the U.K., and other places just aren't looking that much better right now. So while the Jewish community here has shrunk, from what I'm hearing, people aren't really feeling like the grass is greener elsewhere, at least right now.
I think you've put your finger on it exactly. I think if you speak to those in the know, the number of anti-Semitic incidents worldwide has shot through the roof. Here they've remained exactly the same for whatever reason. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's something to do with the liberation that came in 84. I don't know if there was a buy into constitutional values, but for whatever reason, Dan, touch wood, we are not sensing what the other Jewish communities worldwide are feeling.
And I also think, I mean, as we spoke about at our talk yesterday, where Jews lived in very different places 50 years ago to where they live today. And I believe that in the next 50 years, Jews will not be concentrated 85% in just Israel and the U.S. Things are constantly evolving. You don't know when a country's fortune is going to change or when the rest of the world is going to change. For example, South Africa could suddenly become much more attractive if there were a third world war and people wanted to be very far away from the conflict. As you said, South Africa has very low rates of anti-Semitism compared to other countries. Yeah. Things are always in flux. So, you know, something that we spoke about also was, you know, never declare a community dead prematurely. So there have been places, for example, like Ethiopia, we spoke about, where people said, that's it. There's no more Jewish community in Ethiopia. Everyone's made Aliyah. Suddenly, hundreds of descendants of Jews who were forced to convert are doing an Orthodox conversion now and want to be the future of the Ethiopian Jewish community.
That's absolutely remarkable. I thought there were big issues of identity there. I thought for whatever reason, those who were descended from the Beta Yisrael, those who were forced to convert to Christianity, were almost shunned by the, inverted commas, proper Orthodox Ethiopian Jewish community. Is there tension? Do you know anything about that between the two different streams?
Well, what I can tell you is they're called the Falasha Mora. They don't like being called that, but that's how they were known. The word Falasha actually means foreigner. So even though they had converted to Christianity, they were still not allowed to own land, and they were not afforded the same rights as Christian Ethiopians. They still faced discrimination. So they were not accepted as Jews anymore by the Jewish community, but they weren't accepted as proper Christians by the general Ethiopian population. And when I was in Ethiopia, I met one of the last two Adeni Jews from Yemen. So Ethiopia and Eritrea had hundreds of Adeni Jews, of Yemenite Jews, in their larger cities. They had communities. And what I learned was, first of all, the Yemeni Jews and the black Gondar Jews would pray together in synagogue, even though their languages and customs were very different. But what this Yemeni man said to me was amazing about the Falasha Mora. He said, you know what? They have suffered so much more than I have for being Jewish because of their conversion and they weren't accepted, that they deserve to rejoin the Jewish people. And I thought that was quite an amazing comment.
That is an amazing comment. Apropos absolutely nothing, I've got a thing about Ethiopian Jews. I can't explain why. I just find it incredibly exotic. And I also think we're Africans. I actually share something with them. You know, we're Rift Valley people. And when I go to Israel and I see an Ethiopian soldier holding some sort of Uzi, I get very emotional about it. I think this is my brother. But, sorry, my thought has gone absolutely haywire. Yes, I know where I was going with this. The roots trips by Ethiopian Israelis back to Ethiopia. I don't know if you've seen any of them on YouTube. I find them incredibly moving. I mean, here you get a real Tel Aviv, Kugli kind of happening Israeli girl going back to a reality, Dan, that you could not describe to her. She had no idea what she was going to see. The level of, I don't want to use the word primitive because it sounds judgmental, but lack of first worldness. on the one hand, it's so heartbreaking. You see this emotion of them wanting to connect. On the other hand, they're not that anymore. They've become Israelis.
Well, I think that you could say the same thing when you go to Lithuania. You probably don't feel connected to the place anymore. I think that when you live far away from your homeland, you lose your language. It doesn't feel like home anymore. So I think what's happened to the Ethiopians is exactly what's happened to Jews who have immigrated everywhere. What I think is interesting, though, and we were talking about this yesterday, can you imagine if the regime in Iran falls and if they have a government that's friendly to the West, if they reestablish relations with the U.S. and Israel and they have direct flights again to Tel Aviv? Can you imagine the renaissance that will happen within the Iranian Jewish community? Can you imagine all of the Iranian Jews living outside of Iran who are going to want to return or spend part of the year there? All of the Israeli business people that are going to want to go and take advantage of opportunities of an Iran that doesn't have sanctions anymore? That's what I'm saying, is that places change, circumstances change, and sometimes we just declare a community dead prematurely until something drastic happens, and then suddenly people want to be there.
Absolutely spot on. I love what you're saying. I've got this fantasy of what the Iranian Jewish community could look like. I'll be the first on a plane to go and visit.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So I'm really enjoying the fact that with me in studio today is Dan Brotman, journalist, travel writer, business owner, lots of interesting things. We'll even get to talk about Project Diaspora towards the end of our discussion this afternoon, I promise you. But I do want to talk to you, Dan, about Iran. Iran's the flavor of the month. Many of us forget that the Iranian Jewish community is significant. It was way bigger. It was way more significant. But there are, what, 50,000 Jews living in Iran today?
Today, it's probably closer to 9,000. But what many people don't know is that it's the largest Jewish community in the Middle East outside of Israel.
Okay, but it's nothing like it was.
I mean, no.
It was a significant, powerful community once upon a time. 9,000 is barely...
It's like about 10%. It's a little less than 10% of what it was pre-revolution. But I spent time in Iran, and I spent time with the Jewish community in Iran in 2019.
So talk to me about the conversations that you had. Were you treated with suspicion because you were an outsider? Who are those that stayed? Let's begin there. Why did those 9,000 choose to stay under an Islamic regime when they could have left and gone to Los Angeles or Tel Aviv?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, first of all, that that's unique to Iran. So, for example, tomorrow I'm flying to Zimbabwe. I'm going to document the 100 Jews living in Zimbabwe. Many people ask the same question. Why did they remain? Why do Jews remain in Venezuela? Why do Jews remain in Syria? Well, based on the conversations I had in Iran, there were a few reasons. One is very practical. There are not many countries they can go to. The U.S., which has the U.S. and Israel have the largest Persian Jewish populations. There's a travel ban on Iranian citizens entering the U.S. right now. So that means that the U.S. is completely out for them. Even though they're Jews, they're Iranian citizens, they cannot enter the United States and immigrate there. If they immigrate to Israel, they're never allowed to return to Iran. So imagine you have elderly parents, elderly grandparents. You'll never be able to see them again. So there's a practical reason of, okay, we leave. Where do we go? There's another practical reason, which is a lot of them have family businesses. They're business owners. They sell the businesses. They're going to get nothing for them. And then what? They're going to be penniless and arrive in Israel.
Yeah,
so that's another reason. There were people who said, this is where I'm from. I'm Persian. But based on the conversations I had, it was mostly practicalities, practical reasons why they stay.
So much to my huge surprise, I found out quite some time ago that the Iranian constitution actually ensures that there is a Jewish representative in the Iranian parliament. I mean, I'm not sure what that actually means. I don't know how much freedom of thought the man's actually allowed. But pretty remarkable that there is, in terms of the constitution, a right of recognition of a Jewish representative.
Correct. I mean, it's not only Jews. It's all the recognized minority religions have representation in the Majlis, the parliament in Iran. But, I must say the Iranian Jews live as second, if not third class citizens in their own country.
Because that's fascinating. I didn't know that. I assumed equal rights.
No, definitely not. So for starters, if you're a foreigner and you go to Iran and you want to meet the community, you have to get official permission from the government. You don't need that for any other religion other than the Jews. Mezuzot are outlawed. So for me, it was like fascinating seeing shuls, seeing kosher restaurants. There were four kosher restaurants in Tehran when I was there. There was no sign that they are Jewish. There's no, or kosher, there's no mezuzah, there's no sign in Hebrew, there's nothing.
Wow.
You just sort of have to be in the know. The headmaster of the Jewish school, they have multiple Jewish schools, but the headmasters of the school, the schools must be Muslim. They do not teach the Holocaust. They're not allowed to own large businesses. They're not allowed to work in the civil service. And of course, I'm not going to reveal any details, but an Iranian Jew who lives in Iran has been in touch with me. And he told me that especially since the war between Israel and Iran in June, they're facing increased persecution. And I could just read you a few lines of what, what he wrote to me.
Please.
So he said, "We are persecuted." And so I said, "What do you mean? What are they doing to Jews now?" He said, "Harassment, employment restrictions." And I said, "How do they harass Jews?" He said, "In all respects." I said, "Can you give some specific examples?" He said, "Employment restrictions, tax increases, and not being insured."
Fascinating, fascinating. So much for what it appears on the outside, and the representative back at the ranch, still second-class citizens in Iran. Okay, that's a bit of a wake-up call. In terms of discussions and that you were able to have with the Jewish community when you were there, did they treat you with suspicion?
Certainly. Certainly. I mean, first of all, I would suspect they're being surveilled by the government, and they know that they're being surveilled by the government. So when I had conversations with leaders in the Iranian Jewish community, they were very, very guarded when we spoke, extremely guarded, as if they knew that we were being listened to. They are constantly having to disavow any connection they have to Israel. They, you know, when I went to the headquarters of the Jewish community in Tehran, I saw many photos of them protesting in favor of the nuclear program, in favor of the Ayatollah. They're having to show support for the people who are working for the destruction of their own people, essentially. So for me, that was quite shocking. I know that in June, there were reports when the war started that they were arresting dozens of Jewish leaders, including rabbis in Iran. They're constantly suspected of spying for Israel. My understanding was that in June, many of them were in contact, I guess via WhatsApp, with relatives in Israel. They have now been instructed that they must cut all ties with family members in Israel. So I just imagine that the persecution has increased and they're all being watched.
I don't know where time went. Clearly enjoying speaking to you in the short time that is left. Talk to me very quickly and very succinctly about Project Diaspora.
So Project Diaspora is an initiative that I started with another young Jewish guy. And basically, as I mentioned, 85% of Jews today live in only two countries, the U.S. and Israel. We're losing our diversity. All Jewish communities outside of those two places are diminishing. It's not just South Africa. There are some communities that are in their final generation, one more generation, and they won't exist anymore. So we're doing two things. We're doing group tours to communities that have one more generation to go to document them, to meet the last members of the community. And we're also working on a documentary. It's going to be a 5-part series where we visit 5 endangered Jewish communities around the world. And we, what we really want to understand is the question that you posed. Why do people stay when everyone else leaves?
Dan, are you on the internet? Where can people follow you?
Yes. So if you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Dan Brotman. You can also go to diasporaexpeditions.com.